Hello, everybody, and welcome to another podcast here on Sports Talk Chicago. It's our 14th, and it's another milestone. My name's John Zagluel, owner and operator of Sports Talk Chicago. Today, we're going to be covering everybody as usual, and we will have another special guest, but first, a few quick announcements. Make sure to follow Sports Talk Chicago on Twitter, at Shy Talk Sports. Make sure to hit me up personally on Google+, LinkedIn, and Twitter as well, at John Zags. And again, if you're in the Tinley Park area, trying to find a gift shop, trying to buy a birthday gift for your kid or for anyone else, go to Moochie World, a peculiar place, at the Tinley Park Down Shopping Center, address 7913 171st Street in Tinley Park. You can call them at 773-796-8224. That's 773-796-8224. Also, congratulations are in order. Sports Talk Chicago has recently been approved by Major League Baseball to report baseball news. So thank you to the MLB for approving us. We won't let you down. Now on to our special guest. He used to work here in the Chicago area for WGN Radio, covering the Bears, Sox, and Cubs. He then moved out west. Now, on MLB Network Radio on SiriusXM, he hosts two shows per day. Let's give it up for Mike Farron here on the show. So again, folks, Mike Farron on the show. Mike, how you doing today, and thank you for being on.
John, it's my pleasure. It's good to talk to you.
All right, so first question. Now, in this past offseason, in which $2 billion have been spent, which is a record, which team has emerged, do you think, as the winner of this offseason heading into spring training?
No, that's tough for me to say who the real winner is overall. I mean, I think that there are several teams that have improved significantly. And I think even though they didn't make a ton of moves, they made two really significant ones. The Red Sox certainly are a much better team than when they ended the season. I think Arizona is a team that, obviously has taken a huge step forward by adding Greinke and Miller, signing Tyler Clippard, and that's a team that I think is very, very good going into the year. I think the Cubs are an interesting team in what they've done this winter, focusing mostly on offense with the moves that they've made. I think Adam Warren's kind of a nice little sleeper pickup, though, too. So, those are kind of some of the names of the teams that come to mind right away when I think of teams that are, I guess, so far winners of the winter. Although I will say this, we've seen an awful lot of teams that have won the winter who have not seen it translate to success over the course of the regular season. And that's another thing that I think you have to keep in mind. San Francisco, the New York Mets, those are a couple of others that I think have really good winners.
And exactly, you mentioned the Diamondbacks. And yes, they signed Zach Greinke. Tyler Clippard, they got Gene Segura and Shelby Miller in trades. But I wanted to ask you personally, I mean, you think of the 2015 Padres, all the moves that they made, and they didn't turn out to do anything. So what do you think we'll see out of the Diamondbacks this season?
Well, I think I've heard that comparison a lot, and I think it's bunk for the most part. And the reason is that the Padres were revamping an entire roster, whereas the Diamondbacks are augmenting the youngest core of players in all of baseball. They had the youngest roster overall last year. The oldest regular on the Diamondbacks team is Wellington Castillo at 29 among the position players. And you have a top five talent in Paul Goldschmidt, a top 15 talent in A.J. Pollock anchoring that lineup. To me, I've heard that a lot, and maybe it's just because they're on the West Coast, and so people are skeptical of teams in the Mountain and Pacific time zone. But I don't see it as being even remotely the same. In terms of the volume of moves the Padres made, or two, the core that they're trying to build from. I mean, I think you just look at it and say, well, it's a 79-win team that's made all these moves, ignores the fact that it's a really good young team that has its trajectory on the upswing.
And yes, I agree with you there. And now here's a question, and this has been troubling me too. How shocked are you that quality free agents like Dexter Fowler, Ian Desmond, Yovani Gallardo, Pedro Alvarez, they've went unsigned thus far, and how do you think that the implementation of the qualifying offer is serving as a roadblock for many free agents out there today?
You know, I think you mentioned a guy in Pedro Alvarez who doesn't have the qualifying offer attached to him, obviously, but I think you bring up indirectly a very important point. I think it's having a huge impact on those guys. I think it's a big reason why they haven't signed to this point and are going to sign late and likely for less money than they would have been guaranteed otherwise. But I think the other aspect of it is that there is a trickle-down effect that comes from this where you're seeing, I'll use the example of a guy we had on our radio show this morning. David Murphy is a really good player. That guy hit 280 last year, 10 homers. He's a perfect fourth outfielder. He's the kind of guy that is a really important piece for a contending team. He's a left-handed hitter, hits righties. He's not going to soil himself against lefties. He can play every day if there's an injury. He's a very, very good player. He's still unsigned, and he's in part considering minor league deals in addition to some major league options, because I think the qualifying offer free agent, and specifically a guy like Dexter Fowler at this point, is still out there on the market, and so it's pushing down the availability for guys like David Murphy, who's certainly capable of helping a contending team. So it isn't just impacting the players that have the qualifying offer attached, but it's impacting other players that are available on the market as well.
Yeah, that makes sense, too. I mean, another guy that comes to mind, Marlon Byrd, too. I mean, he had a great year last year as a 36-year-old, and he's still looking for a team at this point. He might have to settle for a minor league deal, as you mentioned.
And you're talking about a guy who's probably only looking for a one-year commitment, too. I mean, that to me is amazing. I mean, still, all of these guys without jobs. And I think, at least part of it, I don't think it's entirely because of that. I think certainly, you know, front offices are smarter when it comes to the aging curve. They're not willing to put as much financial risk into players that are over the age of 30 anymore, which is smart because, you know, a lot of time is still undefeated. But at the same time, you know, these are still quality players that have, you know, enough left in the tank that, especially on a short-term engagement, can help your team.
And speaking of Dexter Fowler, where do you believe he will end up? Because we've heard rumors that the Cubs might trade Jorge Soler and take Fowler. Or the Sox are also in play because Avisail Garcia, I mean, he's not the real deal. Mm-hmm. So where do you think he'll end up?
I think it's a really interesting question, too. I think both the Cubs and Sox are in play. You know, there were some rumors yesterday that his market may be down to what Howie Kendrick got, 2 years and $20 million. That would put Baltimore in play. I believe Texas has been engaged with him as a potential option. Those are really the suitors that I think, off the top of my head, fit the best. Although, you know, if he starts getting into a two-year commitment, there are going to be a lot more teams that are interested in him. He has a little bit of a nagging injury history in the past. I think that's part of, you know, what is being used as an excuse to not sign him. So I think, you know, both the Cubs and the Sox certainly are in the mix. I felt all winter long what Sox's best option was going after Ian Desmond, so they're going to sign a qualifying offer free agent because they've had such a hole offensively at shortstop.
And now both about the Cubs and the Sox here. So do you believe that the Cubs are the real deal in 2016? And what pieces might they still need to make a run at a World Series championship? And then for the Sox, how do you feel about the recent Matt Latos signing, and what are their chances heading into 2016?
Well, let's start with the Cubs. Yeah, I mean, I think that they're the real deal. I mean, I think they're probably the odds-on favorite right now to win the National League. And, you know, there are a couple things that could derail them. One, sophomore slumps, and that's just, you know, that gets thrown around a lot. The young players have to make adjustments, and we'll see how quickly they're able to make them. Certainly Bryant and Schwarber, you know, burst onto the scene last year. I think Russell got better as the year went on. So they're in a good position to be able to have success, and they don't need to rely on all of those guys having, you know, huge years this year. But if, you know, one of them takes a step backwards, I think they have the depth to be able to handle it. So I think that's part of it. And then I think the injuries, too. Injuries are, something you have to keep an eye on, specifically with the rotation. You know, you start looking at that's where their kind of core is aging at least a little bit. And on the rotation side, you know, Lackey's in his mid-30s, Lester into his early 30s, Arrieta, I think, turns 30 this year. So, you know, they really can't afford to lose those three guys for any prolonged stretch. Now, the good news is that since Lackey, you know, had elbow surgery to repair his elbow ligament, he's been perfectly healthy, such a little bit of a hamstring issue. Lester has been healthy outside of some soreness in spring training last year. The area got a slow start to the year 2 years ago, but he's been mostly healthy. So So all of those things are positives for the Cubs, and I think that's really kind of the only things that can derail them. You know, they have to go through a very difficult division, but in at least being a contender for the postseason. So the White Sox, you know, I love the Matt Latos deal. That's a no-risk deal for guys 28 years old who have to be highly motivated with free agency potentially looming again at 29. He had a miserable season last year. He was limited by injury the year before, but still pitched really well for the Reds. Fastball velocity is still there. Put him with Donnie Cooper and Coop's history of working with pitchers. I think it's a really good fit. I think the White Sox have been, I'd be curious to get your take on this too, John. I mean, I think they've been a little bit maligned for their winter. They made some pretty significant upgrades at third base and at second base. You know, Lowry didn't have a great year last year, but it was still better than what they had out of the second baseman. And Todd Frazier's a really good player. So they've improved overall, even if they don't add a guy like Dexter Fowler. I think that's part of the thing that gets overlooked a little bit with the White Sox, is that they've quietly gotten better. They've made incremental improvements.
And I agree with you, especially on the Matt Latos deal, because you look at their rotation behind Sale, you know, Quintana, I mean, and Rodon. I mean, their number five starter was looking to be Eric Johnson, who's, you know, really unproven. So I think Latos will give him a low-risk, maybe even high-reward spot there at the number 3, 4, or even 5 spot. So, yeah, I agree with you. It's not a bad idea at all to go out, sign somebody for $3 million. I mean, you have nothing to lose. And I think overall for the Sox, I mean, they did make a lot of improvements. And key thing is, too, I mean, they got Frazier in a trade. You know what I mean? They're not spending as much money as they've done in years past. So hopefully those results will correlate in the field as well.
Yeah, I think you know, certainly they spent a lot of money, but not 2 winters ago, in you know, adding LaRoche, Cabrera, and Robertson, and only really 2 of those deals worked out. Cabrera had a great second half, and Robertson, you know, was just fine. You know, LaRoche obviously struggled last year, and hopefully you can expect more from him, and you know, what very well may be his final year. So, I think, you know, I understand not necessarily spending big this winter, but it is interesting that there are 2 players out there that can help them. You know, Fowler's acquisition would move Eaton to corner, which I think is better suited for him, too, if you were to be able to move him to left field and Cabrera to right. And I think the other thing is that, obviously, as we hit on earlier, you know, Ian Desmond is the guy that I kind of targeted early out in the winter. They weren't going to go after Justin Upton, and Ian Desmond was a guy who was a great fit for them. Athletic, power-hitting shortstop. There's questions about whether or not Tim Anderson is going to be a shortstop when he comes up, or if he'll have to move to the outfield. To me, that's a no-brainer in my mind that Ian Desmond's a great fit. Plus, quality guy, clubhouse guy, adding him and Todd Frazier does a lot, I think, from the intangible standpoint, making it a better place to work.
And you mentioned Tim Anderson, and something I wanted to mention, too, is I know the MLB Pipeline Top 100 recently came out, and we saw that Byron Buxton finally got dethroned from his number one spot. In replacement is Corey Seager. How do you feel about that move? Personally, I think it was the right move, but I want to get your take on that, too.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, overall, I mean, I think, you know, a lot of these lists are there's a lot of subjectivity with it. I think Buxton kind of gets dinged a little bit for the injuries and then for the fact that his numbers in his first 130 plate appearances were pretty similar to what Mike Trout's were over his first 130 plate appearances or so in the big leagues. So, you know, I mean, listen, I think they're both premium prospects. I think it's a really, you know, it's a nice problem to have to be able to rank those guys at the top of the list. I think Buxton probably has a little bit better all-around game than Seager. Seager's going to hit for more power. I think the fact that he can stay at shortstop in the short term makes him a little bit better in that regard, but I think what's most interesting about that list, I think it was one of the top dozen prospects, half a dozen of them for shortstops. And guys that have a chance to stay at shortstop. And I'm really excited about some of the guys that are a little bit further down the list. I love Seager, don't get me wrong. Orlando Arcia with the Brewers, I think, is going to be a really, really fine player. I think J.P. Crawford's going to be really good with the Phillies. So, you know, there's a lot to like overall in kind of the top of that list. But, you know, we were debating this a little bit today. Buxton's injury history, you would think would have knocked him out of the top spot earlier, but it didn't. But he still has those loud tools, and he's closer to actualizing it. Despite what the numbers say, you know, from last year, I think he's got a chance to still be a pretty significant impact player.
Now, Mike, just a little bit of a personal note. I mean, you've had some Chicago roots after you began your career broadcasting for the Orioles AA affiliate. You spent 6 years here at WGN Radio, and your career really took off after this, and now you're here at SiriusXM Radio for MLB Network. So can you describe to my viewers and to myself really the process that it took to become the accomplished professional that you are today?
Well, it was actually, so I'm actually started in Dubuque, Iowa, is where I started. I'm from Chicago. I was born and raised in Lake Forest. So started working in Dubuque, Iowa when I was a junior at Loras College there, go Duhawks. And just kind of, you know, radio is a little bit like the minor league. Traditionally, you work your way up through small markets. And that's kind of what I did through Dubuque and La Porte, Indiana, and then spent time at WGN before I went to Sirius and actually worked for the buoy team when I was working at Sirius too, just doing some play-by-play. And, it's been a great ride. I mean, I've been really fortunate the last 8.5 years that I've been allowed to talk baseball full time. I'm going to get to live my dream of calling major league games this year because they're in the Arizona Diamondbacks broadcast crew as well. And, so I'm very, very excited about this year, and it's been, it's a lot of fun. I'm one of those people that I think I look back on and I really enjoyed the journey. Some of my favorite moments were when I was working at Dubuque, but I've really enjoyed everywhere I've worked and everything that I've done.
All right. Well, that's Mike Farron, folks. Again, host on MLB Network Radio on SiriusXM. Mike, I appreciate you coming on the show today, and I really just appreciate your time.
No problem.
Thank you. And with Mike on the show, we're going to switch gears here from baseball and the Cubs and the Sox and move on now to the Chicago Bulls. And what a catastrophe it has been for that team so far. And I don't know if you saw, I recently published an article really describing the problems for the Bulls. And in my opinion, and I know it's people will disagree with me, let's put it that way, but it's Fred Hoiberg, and I'm sorry if I disappointed Fred Hoiberg aficionados, but he is just not doing it for the team. Hoiberg, in my opinion, I mean, he's too passive to be an NBA coach. He's lost control of the locker room already when Jimmy Butler was openly critical of Hoiberg about a month or two ago. And again, what I've noticed from in-game situations, and this is a quote from my article, the team itself is more passive, possessing lower amounts of intensity compared to the Thibodeau regime. Offensively, the Bulls run the same scheme where it seems as if the three-point opportunities are frowned upon, while high-percentage shots are preferred. And again, when I watch Bulls games, it seems like everybody's always lined up around the three-point arc. They're passing the ball around the same way. They drive in, they put up this baby hook shot, and half the time it doesn't even get into the basket. I'm sick as a Bulls fan. I mean, this is like a public service announcement. I'm sick of seeing stuff like this. The Bulls have to come out with energy. They've got to come out with a good mantra if they want to win games. And Hoiberg, again, what I really noticed is he's frowning upon the three-point shot, which I don't believe in. You got Doug McDermott, Mike Dunleavy, who just came back from injury, and Nikola Mirotic, another example. These guys are three-point shooters. They shouldn't be penalized for avoiding to put the ball up from three. That doesn't make any sense to me. And also, I compared Fred Hoiberg to Mark Trestman. And I know, different sports, but the same idea. They're both passive, and they have a low-energy mantra off the court. And here, if I had to compare Hoiberg to a former Chicago coach, it would have to be Mark Trestman. Both individuals practice a passive tone that resonates with the players. In-game performances wither under both of the coaches' attitudes, and locker room incidents take place more often than not. These 3 points left Trestman unemployed after two dismal years at the helm, and if the same attitude persists, Hoiberg may find himself out of the job as well. Certain qualifications are needed to secure a high-profile coaching gig, and the characteristics embodied by Fred Hoiberg are a far cry from what it means to be an NBA head coach. Fred Hoiberg is not the answer for this team, and if the Bulls had a chance or had hope of re-signing Tom Thibodeau, you could kiss that dream goodbye. Reports have surfaced that the Knicks, after they just fired Derek Fisher, are looking in to hiring Tom Thibodeau. He is apparently their first choice. So now Thibodeau is going to come in to the United Center and really just pounce all over the Bulls. And I know there was a controversy about overworking the players and having them burned out by the playoffs. But at this point, the Bulls might not even make the playoffs. Right now, they have a 1.5 game lead on their 7th playoff spot. It's crazy for me to think that the Bulls won't make the playoffs. I mean, even under the Vinny Del Negro regime, they went 41-41 both years, and hey, at least they made it. So there are a lot of question marks around the Bulls right now. Another one is Derrick Rose, and this is also coming from my article. Now, Rose, he has a problem. He's averaging only 15.9 points per game, 6.5 field goals per game, and 2.2 free throws per game. All of these statistics are noticeable career lows, and they all correlate to a certain aspect of Rose's game. Now, in my opinion, he is simply not driving to the basket as much as he did in years past. Although this revelation is understandable due to previous injuries, it still does not benefit the Bulls as a whole. Rose continues to put up low percentage shots, which lead to fewer opportunities for the Bulls to score points. This rather self-destructive pattern has to conclude soon, as the Bulls have lost a total of 15 games by 10 points or less. An extra chance to score, or a less aggressive three-point approach by Rose, could have easily been the difference maker in all 15 of these heartbreaking losses. So Derrick Rose and his over-aggressive traits have got to end. If Rose wants a chance to, you know, become the next big thing once again, he's got to do what he does best, and that's drive to the basket. And here's something that I've mentioned before, and I'll say it again. Rose is getting overpaid over $20 million a year. He's not going to perform at his best if he's getting paid that much money and he has nothing to prove. What I would do for the Bulls is I'd either restructure his contract to where he'd be making the veterans minimum, or release him and have him sign onto another team for the veterans minimum. Have a chance for him to prove himself. Another thing, and I compared him last time too, to Brandon Roy. Brandon Roy, all-star point guard for the Trailblazers, had a lot of knee problems, wasn't performing well. The Blazers cut him, he got picked up by the Timberwolves, played a handful of games, and didn't do well, so he subsequently retired. Derrick Rose has got to start thinking about what his role is and what he can contribute to the game of basketball. Because if he's not going to contribute anything, then he might as well hang up the cleats. So again, the Bulls, what they have to do here, make sure that Hoiberg possesses more of a high-energy spirit. Have the Bulls shoot more three-point shots. Injury problems are always going to be there, but it's nice to see Dunleavy back. And for Derrick Rose, he's got to prove himself. The Bulls, if they need to, they need to restructure his contract or release him and have another team pick him up. And he, again, has to decide what he can contribute to the game of basketball and at how high of a level can he do it. Those are the questions the Bulls face. And now we move on to the Chicago Bears. Now the Bears right now, in the offseason currently, they don't have a lot going on at this point. OTAs starting up after the draft. But for right now, what do the Bears have to do to become playoff contenders next year? Well, first of all, they've got to make sure Jay Cutler, is okay with the new offensive coordinator. As we all know, Adam Gase recently became a head coach for the Miami Dolphins, which, good for him, obviously, he's deserved it. But now, what happens to Jay Cutler? Former quarterback's coach is now the offensive coordinator. And for Cutler, the key for him is he had one of the best seasons of his career last year since his days with the Denver Broncos. He has to really think about how comfortable will he be with this offensive scheme. Now, from what I've heard, the new offensive coordinator will mimic most of Adam Gase's play calling, and if that's the case, we should be in for a good one. But if not, Cutler has to really conform to that new offensive style and make sure he will be an asset for the team. Matt Forte, that question which has been circulating for such a long time, will he re-sign? Will the Bears pay out to re-sign him? Now, as much as I love Matt Forte, I've gotten autographs, I've met him before, I do not think the Bears should sign him. Financially, to me, it doesn't make sense. Think about who they have on this bench. Jeremy Langford, who arguably is the Bears Offensive Rookie of the Year, had a great season, is going to be back next year as a sophomore in the NFL. Then you think about behind him, Kadeem Carey, you know, guys like Jaquizz Rodgers. These are quality running backs who have been around now for a couple of years. I think Lankford should become the next starting running back. Forte should go to a team where running backs are needed, because the Bears should not have to pay out, you know, $7, $8 million to retain him when they have perfectly good players right there on the bench. Same philosophy to Martellus Bennett. Bennett, who is kind of getting up there in age right now, he should not be retained. I mean, think about it. Zach Miller, big year, nearly 500 receiving yards in a limited amount of time, and became one of Jay Cutler's most favored targets. And yes, personally for me, he became a fantasy financial asset. So a lot of things going around right now. And for Martellus Bennett, I think, again, he should sign with a different team who needs a tight end. Somebody like Baltimore, or even the Lions, who have had a lot of injuries there. He should not come back to the Bears. Zach Miller has proven good enough, and even Rob Housler is a backup, not bad. One of the top picks in the 2011 draft out of Arizona. He's done okay, and he did okay last year in the season finale. Alshon Jeffrey, another question mark. I do believe the Bears will work out something with Jeffrey, as he will be around for the long haul. I mean, he's a homegrown prospect who's developed into one of the best wide receivers in the NFL, mind you. So again, there are questions surrounding the Bears, and that's my take on it. Martellus Bennett, Matt Forte, they've got to go, because they're going to be taking up too much cap space, and they're going to be providing too little of a performance. Moving on now to the Chicago Blackhawks. And what are they doing right now? Well, I have to say, the Blackhawks do not have a lot of criticisms. They're doing great right now. The Hawks right now, 36-17-4. They lead the Western Conference by 3 points over the Dallas Stars. And hey, look at this. The Chicago Blackhawks will be set to host the 2017 NHL Draft. Something great to see, another draft coming to Chicago along with the NFL draft. Yes, between the Los Angeles Kings getting the 2017 NHL All-Star Game, the Hawks have now gotten the chance to host the 2017 NHL Draft with a big prospect in there, Nolan Patrick. So again, good for the Hawks, especially about this. Also, the team has recently announced a partnership with Univision Chicago. The team plans to present its first ever Spanish language radio broadcast on March 6th. The Hawks announced today a partnership with Univision Chicago on Univision America, which is WRTOAM 1200, on March 6th versus the Detroit Red Wings at the United Center. The game action will be called by Hector Lozano and Omar Ramos, award-winning journalists. So again, good for the Hawks to provide this sort of necessity, because think about how much their fan base has grown over the years. Now they're going to be able to do this. And also, recently, the Hawks have approved a new community center to hold practices and events. So the Hawks right now, a feel-good team here in Chicago. Let's hope they could keep it up on the ice. And now we're going to move on to our final closing segments, starting with the odd sports story of the day. And here's something quite odd coming out of the country of Tanzania. They race goats out there as a sport. Racing goats is mostly a matter of human labor. Event staffers carry each goat, legs and everything, into the roughly plywood and walled over oval of a track. The goats are lined up according to the numbers on their spokes. They race. Whoever wins doesn't have to work for the owner, that is. So some goat racing in Tanzania. And hey, although it's very unlikely, I wouldn't be surprised if it came here to America. Moving on now to the punchline of the day segment. Here's an odd sports joke that we like to share with you, the viewer. So here's the question. Why does it take longer to run from second base to third base than it does to run from first base to second base? Here's the answer. There's a shortstop between second and third base. And again, a little bit cheesy, but you get the gist. That was our punchline of the day. And now, moving on to our famed Announcer's Call of the Day segment. It's my personal favorite. Everybody's talking about it. So we're going to get a nice clip for you folks to listen into. So let me set the mood for you here at home. It's Andre Drummond and the Detroit Pistons. The end of the third quarter is nearing, and Drummond, all the way on the other side of the court, decides that he's going to shoot up a shot 78 feet away. What's the result? Let's listen in.
5 second four. Patterson puts it down, pokes away, picked up by Andre from
three-quarter, and he did it! He had his eyes on the prize and let it fly! Wow! Listen to this crowd. You want to pick me up? You got it right there from Andre. Early in the year, he had a half-court shot against Boston at the end of a quarter. This is three-quarter court here, folks. Look at this thing. Switch! Andre Drummond. That's not from downtown. That's from uptown.
And again, Andre Drummond, what a shot. I don't know if you haven't seen the video yet. Make sure to check it out on YouTube. It's quite something to watch. Well, that's going to be it from us here at Sports Talk Chicago. Follow us on Twitter at @ChiTalkSports. Hit me up personally, LinkedIn, Google+, Instagram, Twitter, everything. Make sure to view the podcast and let me know how we did. Also, again, if you need a gift, if you need a birthday gift, housewarming gift, any gift at all, go to Moochie World, a peculiar place, at the Tinley Park Downs Shopping Center. 7913 171st Street in Tinley Park, Illinois, and you can call them at 773-796-8224. That's 773-796-8224. Also, another special thank you to Mike Farron. I really appreciate him coming on the show. Make sure to check out our next podcast when it comes up. We will have another special guest. Thank you all for listening. Have a nice day. And go Chicago Sports.